What's up, friends? Welcome back to Culture Binge, which is the Wisecrack podcast where we try really hard to understand what the hell is going on in the cultural zeitgeist. I'm your host, Michael Burns, joined as always by the person who has written me a postcard that simply says, quit your job once a week for the past 2 years, Serby. Serby, how are you today?
Ready to quit my job.
Yay. And our special guest, who is getting ready to be a part of a super secret Wisecrack project that I'm contractually bound to say nothing about, Helen Flourish. Helen, how are you today?
Hey, hey, hey. I am super because I already quit my job.
But whoa. Not this job. Different job. So exciting. Hashtag quit your job challenge. So today we're going to talk about the possibilities and problems associated with quitting your job and sort of accompanying labor shortage. We're also going to talk about how we can punish ourselves with nighttime procrastination. Spooky. But before we get into all that, a segment that I love as much as I hate, and I hate as much as I love, Slaps and Chaps, where we tell you about something we've really been digging the past couple weeks and something that we do not like. Serby, as always, we will start with you. What are your slaps and chaps for this week?
So my slap is that I realized the other day that my friend and I have been friends for 20 years.
Whoa.
And it's insane. I am so excited about it because I look back on this friendship and there has never been a single moment of jealousy or envy or anger or anything like that. It's always been so supportive and kind. And she's a physician. So from like medical school and residency and fellowship, and then I've been in business school and everything, like we've always celebrated each other's successes. And so it just makes me so happy that we've been friends for 20 years. And it's just been such a supportive and loving relationship. Best relationship I've ever been in.
That's a good slap. I just must say. That's an all-time slap.
You guys should write like a listicle on like 10 things to make your friendship beautiful, because I feel like this is like unheard of, you know?
No, and especially we've always just been so supportive. Like anytime anything has happened, it's always been like, that's amazing. And I've never experienced that. I mean, I'm always happy for people, but just in general, like to just always feel like when something good happens to her, it feels like it's happening to me and vice versa. And my chap is just that I haven't been sleeping well. Feel like I've been waking up in a blind panic every day at 4:30 in the morning. So I've been trying to do like meditation and deep breathing and stuff like that. So it's a very boring chap, but
it's a valid one. And we shall pray for sleep. Helen, how about you? Slaps and chaps.
Yeah, so I'm going to keep it pretty simple here. I have a slap and a chap at the same time. Yeah, I know, right? Double whammy. So it's cooled down where I live, which is fantastic because it's significantly, you know, it's just significantly more comfortable when you're not slowly, you know, roasting to death in your apartment, right? But it also means that winter and its shorter days and less daylight are on the way, which really sucks. So
yeah, I think we're like 3 weeks away from when the time changes.
Yeah,
which
I'm not
hate.
Looking forward to that. Yeah, I hate that. Yeah. But it feels a lot better than it did. So that's my slap and my chap.
That's very self-contained. And also, if someone understands politics, I mean, I kind of understand this, but we voted so many times to kill the daylight savings thing or keep it in permanent daylight savings, and nothing ever happens. You know, is democracy real? I don't know. Stick around and find out. My slaps this time around. So we actually talked about the show Saturday Night Live on Culture Binge before, and particularly I've talked a little bit about how I've been underwhelmed with it recently. We've talked about if it has a future. Well, this week I'm very excited because Wisecrack guest and friend of myself, Billy Domino, got hired as a writer on Saturday Night Live. So that's very exciting. If you don't know who Billy is, he's been a guest on The Squanch. He was one of my guests on The Good, Bad, Brilliant when we did that show, which Helen was also on. Great guy, incredibly talented writer, very funny person. I've said before, he is the writer of the infamous Seinfeld 9/11 spec script, which you can find online. That's really great. And then also, someone I really, really like, Sarah Sherman, who performs under the name Sarah Squirm, also got hired as SNL on SNL to be a performer. Another person I know and like very much, of super kind, super funny, disturbingly weird person, So very exciting that two people who, I don't know, I really, really like got hired by that show. I'm sure there's other great new people as well, but these are just the two people that I have a personal connection with and like a lot. So props to them. I'm actually going to be excited to watch some SNL this season. My chap is people that get to the movies late and then have to stumble around a crowded dark theater, turning their phone light on like assholes, interrupting it for everyone else. I was at a movie on Saturday. I had one person like run into my legs and another older woman turn on her iPhone flashlight and start moving it around. And at one point she touched me to see if someone was in the seat that she was about to sit in, which is the seat that I was in. And this is why I do appreciate places like Alamo Drafthouse that don't let you in late. And I was in this theater then wanting to focus on a film, but was thinking like, should I judge these people or am I being too judgmental? There's traffic. Maybe they couldn't find parking. Maybe I'm not being empathetic enough, but like it ruins the experience. If you're going to go to the movies, show up early, get a good seat, get some snacks. That's my chat. And I'm sticking to it. So before we get into our topics, just a reminder, if you like this podcast, and I hope you do, like it, subscribe to it, review it. You can subscribe to it on whatever platform you use, whether it's Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes. You can like it on all of those things, review it, give a lot of stars, and leave a fun review. If you leave a fun review that in particular tells us what we would be in certain categorizations of things, then we'll read it on the show. So please do that. It means a lot to us and helps us keep the show going. So now that all of that is said and done, we have nothing else to do but get into the show. So I'm going to start today with a topic that's inspired by a recent newsletter from writer Anne Helen Peterson, who I think we have mentioned on the show before, but Anne Helen Peterson's a writer, used to work at BuzzFeed, runs her own newsletter now that's called Culture Study. It's really good. You should subscribe. There's a good free version. You could also pay for a different version. She also wrote a book called Can't Even, Millennials and the Burnout Generation, which is really, really good. And if you're a burned out millennial, will be fun to read, but will make you feel seen in a really messed up way. But she wrote her newsletter this week about this phenomenon of revenge bedtime procrastination. Now, I don't know about either of y'all, but when I read this, it immediately hit home with me because I am someone who, you know, the other night, for example, was up kind of late, had already watched a couple of movies, and at like 12:30 was like, oh, this new documentary about the surfer I like is on Hulu. I might as well just stay up and watch this for another hour and 40 minutes. Or at other times I'll start reading something, or, you know, I'm sure we've all done the infinite doom scroll on our phone. So she gets into this. I'll read a couple sections from the article and we should talk about it. But this is how Peterson describes it in her article. She says, you stay up binging a mediocre show. You can't stop scrolling Instagram or Twitter or a dating app. You're reading some overly detailed breakdown of a sporting event, past, present, or upcoming. You're playing whatever dumb game you play on your phone. You're trying to figure out who was invited to Allie Love's wedding. Or you're actually doing something you really like, reading for hours, playing a video game you actually enjoy, quilting in the quiet hours of the night, leafing through a new cookbook. It matters less what you're doing and more that you're doing it instead of what you'd plan to do. Go to bed so as to sleep long enough to feel legitimately restored before you go through it all again. You are revenge bedtime procrastinating. And I want to get into some of the stuff she talks about in the article, but first question for you all. Do either of you all recognize yourself in these types of behaviors? Do we have any revenge bedtime procrastinators on the podcast today? Or are you both well-adjusted people that know when to go to sleep?
No, God, no. So I set alarms on my phone for all of the meetings that I have throughout the day. And I have a tendency of doing it right before I go to sleep. Mm-hmm. So what happens is I open my computer, I set my alarms, and then I start to work. And so I do the same thing, but just nothing, none of it is fun. It's not like I'm watching a documentary or doing anything exciting. I'm literally just sitting there working.
Yeah. Helen, does this ever happen to you?
Well, yeah. I mean, when I was working at the startup, I would do the same thing, or the startup I used to work for, I do the same thing that you would do, Serby, where it's like, I'm laying in bed, I go to, you know, do one little thing, right? I'm like, okay, let me make sure that I schedule this thing to go out in the morning, or, you know, whenever, to get the team ready for the day. And then I wind up falling down like a work rabbit hole where I'm suddenly like on, even on Slack or doing whatever. And it's like, wait, well, how did I get here? Now what I do is I find myself, you know, I'll get into bed. I'm like, I've got great intentions. I'm like, I'm going to get into bed. I'm going to go to bed. I'm not even going to look at my phone. I'll put my phone over here. And then I'm like, well, wait, let me just like, you know, read this one thing. And then I'll sit there and force myself to stay awake, which for whatever reason, until I literally pass out with the phone next to me. And it's like, you know, just falling down rabbit holes of different things that I didn't have time during the day to look into.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I'm obviously right there with y'all. And it's interesting to see how Peterson tries to understand this phenomenon. And she does, you know, last week or last episode, we talked about trends in Chinese parenting. And Peterson actually shows that this phenomenon was first kind of described in Chinese culture, and particularly 996 culture, which is the culture there where many people work from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 6 days a week. Jesus Christ, that sounds horrible. And in trying to understand it, Peterson says this. She says, there's an argument that revenge bedtime procrastination is a quiet means of rebellion against your employer. They make you work too many hours. You claw back a few hours to yourself, which in turn affects your ability to function at full capacity on the job. You're single-handedly doing your part to pull down the all-important productivity rate. So, you know, I think there is this idea, and I do think this is something I've felt like before, where you get to the end of a long day and there's like a bitterness sometimes, a bitterness about I've taken all my good hours and given them towards, you know, a profit-seeking corporation that pays me a small amount of wage for the profit that they're then creating and living off of in an ever-increasing, you know, ever-increasing expectations of the workplace, blah, 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 blah. So I think there is this sense of kind of like, fuck you, I'm going to stay up late or watch a movie or do something fun. And I think Peterson also draws a distinction between the difference between staying out late with friends and this idea of like, I'm going to feel shitty tomorrow, but whatever, I'm going to do this, and just like scrolling Twitter alone. And one of those she kind of acknowledges like makes some sense, but the bedtime procrastination makes less. So she says this right after that. She says, you can see how this logic falls apart for the millions of workers whose primary employer is, well, themselves. Alternately, the employer or students or editors or readers still gets the best of us. Everyone else, the people we actually care about, including our actual damn selves, they get the dregs because so many of us have internalized the need to prioritize the work we do for pay above all else. So yeah, that one's kind of dark and hits home, and especially that idea that like we have internalized the logic that what's important is doing work for others. I feel like we're gonna have a theme on this episode, but wow, back
I felt
to y'all
that in my soul. Yeah. Like when you said it, it was like part of my soul just like died and was like, he's talking about you.
Yeah, this is an intervention. We are not recording this. Right. This is just to talk to you. No.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think, you know, also in the article, something that she mentioned is that, you know, at that point, you're a lot of times, and I found myself doing this, it really resonated where you're, you know, you're looking at your phone, you're maybe even looking at, you know, Instagram or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Like on social media, and you're seeing all these people doing the things that maybe you would be doing if you weren't so fucking tired from, you know, working for someone else all day. And those people are probably also eventually laying in bed doom scrolling too, right? But at that point, you're just like, you know, I would, if I were, you know, doing this, if I didn't feel like I was stuck in the rat race, what would I be doing with my life? And instead of having the time to do that thing, you're instead looking at someone else doing that thing. Or at least that's how I used to find myself.
Yeah.
And yeah. And so it's like, you know, where she says, you know, you just, you haven't been having fun. You're just doing something soothing and passive because you just don't have the energy to do the thing you really wish you were doing, spending time with people or whatever that is.
Yeah.
So what's interesting is I used to think the same way you did, Helen, about like, oh, all these people are like living their best lives and like doing everything. And then I have a friend whose Instagram is just full of these beautiful pictures of her traveling all over the world. And she just looks so happy with her job and her life and doing all these exciting things. And then you peel back the layers and she's just like, the rest of us. Mm-hmm. She just happens to prioritize more. She seems to prioritize her like public persona more than I do. I just freely say that I'm fucking miserable and burnt out.
Yeah, no, for sure. Which makes things worse when like people present this public facing image where everything seems great and we feel worse about ourselves. Reading this too did make me think about how far we've come from the initial demands of the labor movement in the early 20th century. So, you know, like one of the reasons we have a 40-hour work week is because people like legit like died and put their lives on the lines to organize and get us there. And one of the slogans of the labor movement was, you know, 8 hours to work, 8 hours to sleep, 8 hours to do what we will. So this whole idea in the labor movement was working 8 hours, great. If that's what we got to do, it's what we got to do. But like hard cap on 8 hours, 8 hours, an appropriate amount of time for a healthy human to sleep, and then 8 hours to do all the other stuff. And I would imagine for most of us, we probably sleep less than 8 hours, work more than 8 hours, and have less than 8 hours to do what we will. And it's always wild to think that we have so much more technology than we did in the early 20th century. We outsource so much more labor. We have so much automated labor. And yet, you know, we are working more than ever, sleeping less than ever, having less time for ourselves. There's a part of the article where towards the end, Peterson kind of gives her theory on why this is happening. And she says, well, I'll cut to this part. Yeah, she says, at least that's my theory. We self-sabotage as a shitty substitute for labor awareness and or collective action. I don't blame any of us for succumbing to the strategy because that's how the system is designed to function. If we feel like shit under capitalism, the fault is not capital's, but our own lack of self-control. And that posture permits the continued erosion of actual leisure, the sort that doesn't feel like stolen hours to continue without protest. So, you know, she's basically saying like that because we don't see this possibility of like collective action or awareness, we internalize the logic that it's our fault, make ourselves feel bad and steal this time back. And I think another thing that compounds this, and I don't know if y'all feel this as well, but I think we all do or have worked remote for a while. You know, it's also a thing as well where it's not like we're like, for many people at least, we're not like in the workplace anymore to actually like talk and see eye to eye with our coworkers and discuss like, oh, we are burned out. We're not spending enough time. What should we do? Let's talk about this. We're all just in our own little digital bubbles working on and off all day. This is a bummer of a thing. But yeah, I mean, what do you guys think about her analysis there?
So when I worked in an office, no one ever talked about being burnt out. Like, nobody ever discussed that. And if I was the one that was like, you know, I really hate this hour commute to work, it was always like, well, that's just how long it takes to get to work. Like, nobody thought anything was different or nobody ever thought anything was strange about it. And it was only when I started to work remotely that people were more open about feeling burnt out or feeling anxious or depressed or overworked or whatever. And I don't know why that is, if they're just more aware of it or... or if you work in an office, you just accept that your life is miserable.
It's interesting because I think being remote maybe gave some people the same kind of sense that they get when they're, you know, on the internet and you're more open with random strangers on Reddit or somewhere than you are in, you know, if you were obviously like in real life with these people, right? And I think I noticed that even among my coworkers as well, where it's like, we feel like we can say these things about feeling burnt out and that kind of, you know, just our general negativity around work. It felt safer because we're not talking about them, you know, in the office with other people, you know, around us. We're doing it over Slack, which has its own precarious nature, I guess, you know, if somebody reads your messages or whatever. But yeah, it's definitely a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think it's interesting, too, that like there's so many things that I think this is why I like Peterson's writing in general. Things that could seem like these individual or generational phenomena, almost like, oh, those crazy tech addled Gen Z or millennials who can't stop scrolling their phone late at night because their brains are weird. I do appreciate that she puts this gloss on it. That's like, no, there's a reason that people do this. There's a reason that we feel this need to reclaim time to be our own. The sick thing about it, of course, is that it negatively affects us, that this thing we do, you know, it's almost like the little kid that likes, you know, this isn't a thing kids do, right? I was going to say something really weird. I was going to say the kid that pisses their pants to make a point. I don't think any kid has ever done that. Maybe I did as a kid. I don't know. I'll ask my mom if I would just stand there
really quickly.
I know. I'm going to call my mom. Like, mom, did I used to piss my pants just to like make a point? Piss protest. You know, jump in the comments if you're a piss protester. But, you know, this thing where we are like doing an activity to reclaim time, to rebel against a system that makes us feel like we don't have time for ourselves. And then in the process, we're just even more miserable the next day, more exhausted, work hits us even harder. And there's just this cycle that keeps going that feels horrible. And I think, I mean, this is something that Peterson gets at in the last bit of her her book that came out last year, which is really great, which is sort of this thing that's like, the only way out of this is some type of large scale rethinking of like what work means, how society should work, and what our priorities are as a society. And sadly, there's no kind of like, we can't therapize our way out of this. We can't just like have a positive attitude about working 60 hours a week and never sleeping that will magically fix it. So yeah, but I definitely recommend, if you guys have more thoughts on this, please share them. But I will say, if you, once again, if you haven't checked out Peterson's work, go look up her newsletter, Culture Study. But final thoughts on the misery of bedtime procrastination from y'all.
Just go to bed.
No, yeah. I don't want to, though. No, Helen, that's the problem.
You can't make me. I think, I just the whole concept of like, I'm not going to go to bed. I'm going to be super tired tomorrow. Like, take that, system, is like hilarious to me and sad. But that's where we're at, you know? That's just like.
Well, let's end with this. Do either of y'all have a regular bedtime, a time that you very actively try to be in bed by every night?
I get in bed by like 9:45, unless I'm up watching something. But then I don't fall asleep until probably 11. I know. I'm trying, though. I'm making an effort.
It's the most responsible thing I've ever heard.
I know. I'm so shocked.
I'm trying. I'm making an effort, man. It was too many late nights where it was like I was getting like 4 hours of sleep. And so I'm like, no, I'm going to do this. But yeah.
Wow.
No. I lay there for hours.
I go to bed, like, I try to be in bed by 12:30, and I think I fall asleep around, like, 1:30.
I see. I'm more on the Serby train on this one. Yeah. So that's why we both found Helen's thing to be preposterous, even though it's so much healthier and it's good. I'm not judging. I'm judging us via being shocked at your thing. So
yeah. No, I mean, I'm judging you for your bedtimes.
Well, you know, everyone let us know your bedtimes, because we're all adults talking about bedtimes. I guess, you know, because this was kind of a grim topic. Now, Serby is going to talk to us about trends in candy manufacturing and new theme parks for adults. Oh, no. That was a different show. Let's keep talking about work. I guess that last topic wasn't just about work. It was then caused by work. But Serby, you're going to talk to us about sort of job quitting and the labor shortage and how everything is great and good. The floor is yours.
Yes. So I'm really interested in people leaving their jobs, because I've realized over the last few months that I might be a workaholic. Most of the time I enjoy work, but I think maybe I've crossed the line between enjoying work and just feeling like I have to always work and always be on. So yeah, I don't know. It's not like a good thing. Like, I love working, so I'm working all the time. It's more, I feel like I've been conditioned to work all the time. And over the course of the pandemic, I've been fantasizing about quitting my job like Alec and traveling around. So I was so fascinated when he said he was going to take some time off from work. And I've heard of other people doing it as well, either taking a sabbatical or like just changing their jobs, like either going into a remote role or working in a different location. And the more I think about it, the more I want to do it, but I don't know if I'm actually capable of doing it. Like, I feel like I would go into withdrawals and feel like I need to do something. I currently work right now from, I don't even want to say the hours because it's preposterous. I'll say it offline. But I work more than 8 hours a day, I would say. And so I don't know how I would fill my time. And I could easily do it if I was traveling. And so I read this article in NPR where somebody moved to a different place and had remote work and felt like they had like better balance in their life. And I think for me, I don't know if I could find that balance, because I already work remotely. I think part of it is like a personality quirk. Anyway, I'm getting like really personal as if this is like therapy hour.
That's okay. Serving. I mean, we're going to both bill you $175 an hour after this, but please keep going.
I'm curious how you two feel. Have you ever thought about quitting your jobs and traveling around like Alec, or have you ever been able to find that balance? Did you feel like the pandemic changed your perspective on work and what matters to you? Because for me, it did. And like Alex or like Byrne said in his topic, that I can't remember the exact phrasing, but like your best hours are given to something that you're to the people you're working for. And so have either of you had your perspective changed as a result of the pandemic? And do you think about what's more important to you now?
I mean, I definitely was spoiled for a bit in pre-pandemic years and like quite a few years ago when I was still in academia, because, you know, I had a lifestyle for a bit. I wasn't making a ton of money, right? Because it was academic stuff, but a lifestyle where, you know, I would teach a 10 to 12 week semester, normally once a term, would get like paid to go to another country, and not paid, but like I would have all my travel pay for to go to another country to like talk for 30 minutes about some philosophy shit, then taken out to a dinner afterwards where you get like shithoused with a bunch of grad students. And then you have, you know, the last job I had 7 weeks of paid time off a year, 5 weeks of like research time. So a lot of life was like this freedom to, I could travel or have weeks where like I would get up, read a little bit at home, take a walk, go to a cafe, read there for a little bit, you know, like. And I was spoiled a bit, and like getting into the real workforce is, and I feel very spoiled saying this. So for anyone who's listening, who's like, this fucking guy, I get it. but also in academia, you have no job security, the money sucks, all that sort of stuff. But yeah, I think during the pandemic, it has hit me that like, I don't know, like, I don't know the answer other than like, I don't want to live like this forever. I think the pandemic, thinking about the future of the planet, not to be too grim, everyone. Looking at like the real estate crisis and the coming economic issues we're going to have, it's just hard sometimes to think like, oh, it's going to be too grim. I'll say something really silly after this, or I'll stand up and pee my pants. But, you know, it's like we have one life to live. We have one period of our life where we're young enough to take advantage of like having fun. And there's that risk that you just get caught up and you give all the best years of your life to being in a certain grind. And it's like, for what? So I think that's something that is hard not to think about. And I know during the pandemic, two of my best friends have both stepped away from their work. But, you know, I think one of those people was lucky enough to have worked in tech and have just made a lot of money over the years. One of those people is lucky enough to have a partner who is a successful Hollywood entertainer. So they have some, you know, money there. I think for a lot of people, if you don't have family money, if you haven't saved a lot over the years, if you don't have a rich partner, it can feel like, what the fuck do I do? And just so everyone doesn't feel too bummed, I'm actively peeing my pants right now.
Thank you. That makes me feel better for sure.
Yeah.
I think, no, I'm actually right with you though, man. Like just when I, and to be clear, I kind of half quit, half got laid off the company. It was a whole thing. But, the reason that I, you know, I approached my boss with the, hey, look, like I'm going to transition out. I want to go. It's because it's kind of very similar to what you said. I realized like, my God, I'm spending so many hours working on this thing that I don't really deeply care about. And I'm not doing what I want to be doing with my life. Like when I'm in my 80s, if I'm lucky enough to get there, well, I look back on this time in my life and think like, wow, I'm really glad that I did that thing. And I'm like, I know that it's a luxury to be able to make that decision. But if I have worked hard enough that I do have some money saved up and that I can at least go pursue the things that I really care about and, you know, feel at least a little bit less icky about what I'm doing every day to, you know, make enough money to live, then I got to give it a shot. Because, yeah, you never know what's going to happen. I could like walk down the street and get hit by a bus or something. And am I going to, you know, in my last moments be thinking like, oh, man, great that I spent all those years working on that app. Like, no, probably not. You know, I want to be making cool stuff and, you know, and pursuing things that I really care about. And so, but again, as you pointed out, I mean, this is a luxury, right? To be able to have the choice to do this, to be able to quit your job in pursuit of something more meaningful. And yeah, so I think a lot of us are coming up against that right now where our values have shifted. and we still have other priorities. And now we have to make a decision, right? Like, do I try to find something that's given me more balance, or that will give me more balance rather? Or do I, you know, just keep chugging along because I know that this is going to give me the financial stability that I need to make other things work in my life?
And it's always the thing, right? Where people will, everyone wishes there was the magic solution, right? Like the magical, because if there was the job where you like made a lot of money, but also had a lot of time off, and like everyone would want to do that job. And I think a lot of people I know in my age, in my mid-30s, are kind of in that balance sometimes of like either burned out from doing a job where they've made money, but feel like they're not making an impact in the world, or they're not happy. Or, you know, I've had friends who have left more like lucrative things to go into teaching or NGO work or whatever. On the other hand, I've had people that have worked in academia or the arts who then hit their mid-30s and they're like, fuck this, how can I make some money and have some stability? So, you know, you kind of see how like the grass is greener thing obviously works both ways. So, yeah, it's hard.
Have both things. I do want to share one story, even though I agree with everything you both said.
Do it.
So I heard of somebody who, she lives in the northeast of the United States, and she is a baker, and she was like, I just can't stand the snow. I can't stand the cold. I want something different. And so she threw out her resume all over the place, and she got a job in Hawaii, and she's going to run a bunch of bakeries in Hawaii. And she's like, I get to do what I love in a new place. So I think there is like hope that like you can find the best of both worlds. You don't have to be like financially independent and have to quit your job. I think it's just about being more intentional, maybe. I took a total 180 there on like, I want to quit my job too. There's hope.
I recently, it's not that I know this person well. Recently, I've been aware of someone who has made their money via selling psychedelics on the internet. In a mellow way. And I've thought about this person and like, oh, that seems like a chill way to live. You like sell psychedelics, whatever, you ship them out in fun containers. But even that person announced this week that they're burned out from that lifestyle. So it's like, if being like a digital hippie drug dealer who sells like acid and mushrooms becomes a burnout job, it's like, we're fucked.
There's no hope for anyone. Isn't that illegal to do it in the mail? Or is what?
I didn't do anything.
No.
It's definitely illegal. It's dealing narcotics. Yeah, okay. And it's sending them across state lines. It's a federal offense. Yes.
So maybe. Wow.
Yeah.
Dang.
Well, one more thing I did want to say about this, though, because I know the article that you sent over, Serby, involves, you know, people quitting their jobs. I did see an interesting discussion last week because, you know, there had been a lot of people like our fallen comrade, Alec. And once again, if you're a new listener to the podcast, until this summer, one of our regular hosts, Alec, left to go kind of like travel in the woods for 6 months with his partner, which rips and is really cool. But there was this wave of people quitting their jobs, and it was like, everyone should just quit. And I did see an interesting discussion by some people that are freelance writers and work in the media last week on Twitter of people just kind of saying, yeah, that sounds great. But for some of us, we can't quit our jobs because we wouldn't have money and then we wouldn't be able to live. And yeah, it does shine the light too on how a lot of these discussions, and I think some very well-intentioned people who are like, miserable, quit your job. And I think it's been like, well, what do you mean? And of course, for the past year and a half as well, and this is the other thing we haven't talked about, a lot of people got a taste of the good life by increased unemployment benefits. So we had this window where during the pandemic, a lot of people had the freedom to quit their jobs because they were getting unemployment and they were getting, you know, we've had the stall on student loan payments. So it created this little window. And of course, the pandemic's horrible. People dying, very bad. But the weird flip side of it is it created these conditions for a bit for some people to be like, oh, this is what it would feel like if I didn't have student loan payments. And if like unemployment was enough to truly cover my needs if I was in between jobs, oh, this feels pretty good. And of course, you know, some of the discussion is like, we can't do this because then people won't work $10 an hour shitty jobs. But it's been this interesting, like, almost seeing what is possible. And of course, now the issue is not to get political, because this isn't a political podcast. This is a culture podcast. But, you know, we've now seen that like, oh, this is just a thing the government can do. They can just say, don't pay your student loans and nothing happens and everything's fine. Like, I think now people are going to be like, wait, why can't we just keep doing that?
So your point about like having enough money that echoes what Helen was saying earlier about like this is a privilege, not everybody can do it. And your second point about the unemployment stuff, I didn't think about that. Like, it does give you an idea of how good life can be if you're not just chained to working your shitty job and having to be on all the time.
Definitely. Any final thoughts on this one, Helen?
Yeah, I just think that, you know, taking away from this article and from what I'm seeing in general, I think people have much higher standards than they did from before the pandemic. You know, I think we're saying, like, not only have our values shifted, but we're also saying, hey, I'm not going to be working in this, you know, abusive fast food environment for, you know, like you said, you know, $10 an hour or whatever. I'm going to find something where I feel like, you know, what I'm doing is meaningful. I think it's going to be interesting to see how that changes, you know, just competition for those really those jobs that allow you the more flexibility in working remotely. I think we're already seeing that a little bit with people having a hard time getting hired at some place. It's like, well, now people are recognizing their worth. So I think it's, you know, it's and they're all going after the jobs that will value them when those do exist, and they do. And I think, you know, it's up to kind of us to keep putting pressure on employers to change conditions, right? So that we can, you know, all as much as possible, like try to have a higher standard of living.
Wow. Helen, Vladimir Ilyich Lenin flourish over here. Sorry for telling your middle name. I know you've said you want to keep that anonymous. Well, that's great. I like ending on that point. Now, before we get to the mailbag, special secret new segment on Culture Binge called How You Hangin'? This is a segment where, because it's been a bummer of an episode, we're all going to talk a little bit about what we do to hang out, relax, have a good time. You can share stuff with us as well, and we'll get in the mailbag. I'll go first so my colleagues have time to think of something, because I may have just constructed this in the moment. But I'll say this. All the stuff we just talked about, last topics, I feel them. I live them. It sucks. Here's three things that I've done recently to find some time for me and do some stuff that feels good. And hanging. I'm lucky to live close to a little hike, and I can do a little 2-hour loop. So some days, if I can finish work when it's still light out, I go on a nice walk. I find a podcast that's about something that has nothing to do with work, where I just like learn some cool shit. So stuff about science or literature or people talking about movies or whatever. And at the end of my hike, I go by kind of like a hippie overpriced grocery store. But I treat myself by going to the drink section because I'm obsessed with overpriced stupid hippie drinks. And I treat myself to one ridiculous beverage that oat seems milk. Good. Never oat milk, but things like... a hemp infused sparkling water with ashwagandha vitamin 19, whatever shit. Yeah.
Dusted with chaga and fairy dust.
Yeah. Just like stuff that I know scientifically isn't real, but I'm like, oh, this is fun. Another thing I've done recently is I've been picking directors I like a lot and just I'm watching their movies in order while reading books that have an essay about all the movies. So that's been kind of fun. And then I would say the third thing that I like doing sometimes is this is maybe a little bit risque, but it's legal in the state I live in. At the end of the night, I like to ingest a safe amount of legal marijuana product and play guitar, which is kind of fun to be a little stoned and playing music. It feels really nice, and being creative can feel good. So those are some of the ways I'm hanging to cope with the fact that life is horrible. Helen, how you hanging?
Oh man. Okay. So I do. We have similar hanging states. I also like to go for nice long walks. I go for a run. I've always been a runner, so I like to run. But you know, lately I've been running a little bit less because it's actually really hard on your knees. Don't know if you guys knew that. But I also like to find a director and go through their filmography in order because it's super cool to see how people's styles evolve and then look at how it's influenced other things and then. As you're revenge bedtime procrastinating at night, then just keep digging into various essays, you know, analyzing their work. Then I read sci-fi bit. That's something, I kind of got back into it fairly recently, just reading in general and sci-fi. And then also, and I don't know how this would be received, but Stephen King, who say what you will, but the man is a master storyteller.
Stephen King rules.
Yeah, dig into a lot of Stephen King.
Awesome. Yeah. Finally, Serby, how are you hanging?
I like to spend time at the beach. I find it very relaxing to have a picnic on the beach and listen to the waves. I also like to read a lot. I do a lot of fantasy. I love to spend time with my mom. That like makes me really happy. So if we're just like watching a show or we're talking and having tea or we're cooking together, I just like to spend time with my mom.
Awesome. Well, this has been How You Hangin', sponsored by Amazon's Jeff Bezos. If we all listen to Jeff Bezos, we'll get to work forever and die soon. So thanks for that. And everyone, hopefully you're finding ways to hang. Life is rough, so we got to find some stuff in the meantime. So Prairie Fire in the chat, thanks for your contribution, said, labor getting its groove back, future is brighter. Dude Abide said, I feel like people who have had to work during the pandemic or suffering due to others who refuse to work. He's dealing with that in his job. But more importantly, it's Dude Abide's birthday. So happy birthday to Dude Abide's. I would say that we have an amazing community of people that listen to Culture Binge, amazing community of people that email us, that hit us up on Twitter. Dude Abide's is probably the king of those people. He has been a constant presence in the Culture Binge community. So we appreciate him. And truly, dude, we hope you have a really good birthday. He's having a birthday by going to work delivering pizzas. So hope everyone tips well. If you are in the region of Michigan where Dude Abide's live, sorry if I doxed you, bro. But it's a big state. They're not going to find you. But I don't know. If you're in Michigan and ordering pizza today and a guy shows up who's in his mid-30s who looks like he would be Dude Abide's, just give the biggest tip you've ever given in your life. Because he deserves it. And also, even when it's not Dude Abide's and it's not people's birthdays, just tip people when they deliver food to you. Don't be an asshole.
Happy birthday, Dude Abide's.
Yeah,
happy birthday. You're the kindest. I hope you have the best day ever.
Yeah, so those are some comments from the chat. But if you're listening to this as a normal podcast, like a normal person, get in touch with us via email. So hit us up at culturebinge@wisecrank.co. That is culturebinge@wisecrank.co. Or you can call us at 213-534-8807. That's 213-534-8807. Feel free to hit us up about any of the topics we talked about today. Also, tell us your bedtime. Also, tell us how you're hanging. Any of these things would be interesting to us, so feel free to email us. As always, we don't always have time to read every email on the show, but we do read every email and appreciate the hell out of them. So we'll go through a few right now. This one is from Bento, and this is about last episode's discussion of Jiwa parenting. They said, just finished the podcast on Culture Binge, left me kind of disappointed because when discussing Jiwa parenting, it wasn't discussed how it affects the child's views on how to express and what is love. When all the parents' energy is being spent on becoming managers, it leaves little time for emotional connection, as activities that are done together are more like chores. They go on to say this expresses itself on the usual worries children have of disappointing their parents by failing in school or extracurricular activities. Success feels as the way to give back to the parents their investment, creating an illusion of a transactional component. The basic gist here is Bento is saying that one of the side effects of that type of parenting is that a child views like the transactional achievements as love rather than love is an unconditional thing. And I would just say, yes, that sounds terrible. It kind of makes me think in a context that I guess I experienced more growing up. I knew some people whose parents were like sports parents, where if their kid wasn't good at sports or didn't achieve, their parent was kind of mean to them. And you got the sense that like love was more like an earned thing based on achievement, or I'm sure for some people it's grades or whatever, rather than just like an unconditional thing. And I think that does sound really dangerous when those wires get mixed.
It does. And it has long-term effects as well. I didn't bring it up in the podcast because it's something that I took for granted, just because I feel like, I think I mentioned in the episode, I grew up in an area where this was like a common parenting style. So every child always said like, my parents don't love me. It's very conditional.
Yeah.
And there's not like a true attachment, like healthy attachment.
Yeah. And you know, and to always everyone, we're never going to get to talk about every angle of a thing in the podcast. We try our best to get so much in here, but we often pick topics that have a lot going on. We could probably talk for 4 hours about what we got into today. There's another email about this as well. It's from Quentin, and it's on chicken blood parenting again. So Quentin said, I just wanted to react to your chicken blood parenting segment. Really echoes the experience of Chinese students in, I'm going to say this wrong, so apologies, Heng Shui type high school. Heng Shui is an extremely intensive high school that grew very popular in China in recent years. Students have an extremely tight schedule organized in 5, 10, and 15 minute increments from 6 a.m. to 10:30 p.m. and only a few free days per semester? Ooh, that almost made me make a real dark joke that would have got the podcast canceled. Good self-control, Michael. Essentially, it's organized to maximize the results of the students to get into for the college entrance exam. Extreme parenting focused on education is a specialty in China society. It's not just a random phenomenon amplified through a heavily biased Western media lens. This is due to many factors such as extreme competitiveness in the job market, fast economic growth, one child policy consequences, etc. Yeah, and I think it's like no surprise then that a huge chunk of Anne Helen Peterson's article we discussed earlier is about the roots of a lot of this procrastinating culture or revenge procrastination in contemporary Chinese culture.
I'm curious if anybody has gone to one of these schools or has been or has experience in some way with these types of parenting styles or schools. Please write in. I'm very curious how. I mean, it sounds not great, but I'd be curious to see if there are any benefits that you've seen from it.
Yeah. Final emails from Mason, and this is about The Activist. I have to update this, by the way. Last episode, we talked about this CBS show, The Activist, and the day after we recorded it, they canceled the show. I'm not going to say that it's because CBS executives all listen to Culture Binge, but I am going to say it was just very funny that I was like, shit, for anyone who didn't listen to this live, by the time our podcast comes out, the show will now have been canceled. But Mason said that he wanted to add their take to the discourse swirling around the upcoming Activist series. While the relentless criticism the series has taken is certainly justified, he says, I think that the medium and method of these critiques actually reinforces the impetus for the show's existence. Network executives might be corrupt and apt and morally bankrupt, but what they aren't is blind. They closely monitor the prevailing cultural winds, and they've certainly noticed that what often passes for activism today is word salad outrage on social media. Accordingly, when the series gets ranked over the coals on Twitter in a dark ritual of collective dopamine harvesting, well phrased.
That's a great way of saying
it's that. Yeah, its cynical view of the activist scene is vindicated. Impotence abounds outside of the internet sphere, so the only thing that matters is likes and shares. I'll concede that it's astoundingly difficult to ignore such low-hanging fruit the memes seem to make themselves as of late, but if we really want to see less of this kind of crude performative content, a better way forward would be an organized concrete action such as a boycott. By bellyaching on Twitter, all we're achieving is giving the activists free press and preemptively increasing ratings by controversy. I mean, I agree with this. Also, though, Mason, we got it canceled. That's probably not it. But I agree. And I do think that, like, maybe we all agree on this, but I don't know. I think that, like, anyone who thinks they're doing meaningful political or social activism by posting online is participating in an act of self-delusion. And the best we can hope for is, like, id release. And sometimes the internet is a way for us to scream into the void, but it's rarely anything more than screaming into the void.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a case to be made for amplifying the work of other people who are, you know, actively making meaningful change, but I totally feel this email hard. It even feels performative when you're doing that much because it's like, wait, what am I doing this for? Hang on. Yeah. Am I really contributing to something meaningful? I don't know. But nobody likes to be dragged on Twitter, right? So that's also partly why, you know, I mean, again, it got canceled. I don't know.
Yeah, being dragged sucks. Even if you know that, like, you shouldn't be dragged, it just sucks. No one dragged me. So, yeah, and the last thing I'll say, we don't have the email here now, but I just remember this. I think it was an email from someone named Jonas, who is at Aarhus University in Denmark, who wrote in talking about online education. I want to shout him out because he's at Aarhus University, where I once got to give some lectures, and is one of my favorite places in Denmark. So shouts to Jonas and Aarhus. Made some good points about, you know, the university system in Europe being different than I was talking about, like the horrific blood-sucking ghoul administrators. I'm excited. This is two episodes ago. I got a few emails from some academics who agreed that they are ghouls. But Jonas made some good points about, you know, how at least over there things are a bit better and some of the pros and cons of online education. So I wanted to shout out that email because I got excited to see that someone from Aarhus listens to us. And if you, I don't know what program you said you're in, Jonas, but shout out to the philosophy department there. I know some wonderful people. Maybe I'll email you back and we'll talk about it. So before we wrap up, first of all, thank you, Helen, one of our semi-regular guests. Thanks for coming back. We really appreciate it. Thanks for being here. Serbi, as always, you're always here, but thanks for being here because we know you had a lot going on work-wise and things are rough. So thank you for carving out the time. And if people want more of you, where can they find you on the internet to do activism at you?
I am on Instagram intermittently at my last name, Flourish, F-L-O-E-R-S-H, or you can find me on Twitter at Helen Flourish.
Awesome. All-time last name. Serby, where can they find you?
You can tweet me, SerbyPatel22.
Awesome. And I'm at Michael O'Burns on Twitter. If you want to find me on Instagram, put underscores on both sides of that O, and you'll find me, baby. So we'll be back in 2 weeks. I'm not going to say it directly because I'm not 100% sure, but I think we have a very special guest coming through next time. Also, if you are not currently on our Patreon, note that we are starting to do some Patreon podcasts. We will have a monthly special Extra Culture Binge coming for you. So subscribe to the Patreon if you want. It's not very much money, I don't think, but look into that. But if not, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks again, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.